Do you believe in the glue guys? All right, well, welcome back to the Glue Guys. This is Mike Ursulo, Brian.
Hello.
Check us out on netsdaily.com, Almighty Baller Network, at BGGlueGuys on Twitter, iTunes, search the Glue Guys, rate us on iTunes.
Can you explain to me what your issue is with that? I mean, it's just really good. I can't believe how divisive this intro is.
What, with that intro?
Yeah. People love it, and people are like, no, there's you.
I don't even dislike it. I do like it. I appreciate it. I just think the energy of it, I love the other one. It's that I like the other one better.
Yeah, it's a little hokey. Well, you're kind of a hokey guy, so that's the thing. You're like Anchorman.
How dare
you? Quote Borat. You know,
did you plan that intro just so then you can insult me?
This is the long play. Yeah.
Welcome back to the Glue Guys.
Oh, thanks. Great to be here, Mike.
Brian Egan, how are you?
I'm doing well. You wanted to hear the story.
So this is a part two
to my broken finger. Everybody.
It's
not a real part two. Yeah. Basically, I caught a shirt last night at Barclays to make up for it. Well, here's what happened. I had a special feeling as soon as I sat down in my seats. I knew that this is exactly around the area where a t-shirt would be shot. So I had a special feeling. And then I was also sitting next to a French guy. And my actual thought about that, he was like, French guy probably can't catch. If a thing's coming at me, stay away from that guy. Because I've learned my lesson with spastic people. He seems
so
like
we're blaming it. We're blaming your hand injury on the person that was next to you last time.
Yes,
yeah, we've decided.
100%. Sure. So obviously, thing comes flying in the seat, like right between us. I let the French guy have a go at it. It flies through his hands, careens off the seat behind us, and lands right between us. He's looking all over for it, and I just casually reach over and grab it, and then he looks at me like, "Oh, like." For me, I was like, oh, no.
Really?
I was like, actually, I have a special connection to this shirt for a couple of reasons.
Yes.
So I'm going to keep it, actually. And it's a hilarious shirt because it's...
What did they give out?
It's just a Nets logo. Like, the top, like, at the 25% of it is Nets logo, and then there's 75% Modell's on the gut of the shirt.
This guy thought that you were going to give it to him?
He thought I was like going to give it to him. I was like, yeah, if you were like... 15 years younger, maybe we'd talk, but yeah,
that's sweet thought to live in the world where you think
French. He's French.
Someone with a broken hand is going to give away a t-shirt.
it hit him directly in the hands and he felt he had some ownership over it despite, and I was like, in America, if you blow a play, that's on you and you know.
Yeah, there's no retribution. There's actually no act two.
Yeah.
You're done. But you did have an act two. Look at you.
Unless you redeem yourself. That's it. That's the only act two we want to see.
I hope there's a trilogy. There's enough time left in the season. The Nets are playing great. Wow. So you can certainly go to the game.
Wow. I've never heard you say anything like that before.
Brian.
Yeah.
How about the Nets? Can we do this? Can we be real about this for a second?
Outside of catching shirts, it was a heck of a game. It was the Hawks game.
This was the Hawks game,
I was at. Wow. It was like... You know, one of the things that we were talking about on G-Chat earlier today is like there haven't been many times where we've had a grind of a win, an ugly win, you know, like things aren't going well necessarily on the offensive end type of win. Like we need things to be going very well on both ends of the ball for us to eke out a win against anybody. And this one, the ball wasn't falling in. It was like, you know, I think we scored 90 points or something.
Brooke was out for the last part of the game and...
Yeah. No, there was like really bad droughts, and normally we would totally get crushed in those situations in the past. But what happened, Mike? Did we lock it down defensively, or is Atlanta totally overrated?
I don't know if you saw this, but this is from John Schumann. The Nets have the best defensive rating in the NBA over the past 2 weeks. Did you know that, Brian?
I've seen, I saw some rumblings about their defensive rating. I didn't know it was that high, though.
Yeah, and so they've played the Pistons, they've played teams that aren't good offensively. But, so like, during the season, what was fun about the Nets was that their offense, they would be shooting a ton of threes, they'd be doing a bunch of stuff. Their defense was always horrible. Mm-hmm. Now we're playing some defense. I tweeted this out. I said this at BK Glue Guys, so you can follow it. I said, if this team was in the playoffs, Brian... They would be making some ruckus.
You know that here's what's sad about this fan base. I think you said that with some sincerity, with some sincerity.
That'd be a good podcast, by the way.
About like 75% sincerity. And some people are like, that's sad. Like, stop poking fun at the Nets. Like, you guys are indignant and you don't even realize it. Like, we're being dead serious about them.
This team is, so it's like not even, I'm not even trying to be like, positive towards my captor. My captor is following this Nets team all season, how bad they've been.
Your and captor? Now, what is that?
You know, there's a complex where the person who abducts you and keeps you captive.
Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah. You begin to sympathize and agree with. So the Nets team has kept me captive the whole year.
You're a hostage.
I've been a hostage to this terrible team with very little hope for all year.
Yeah.
But I don't think this is Stockholm syndrome. I think this is actually, this team is playing well. I mean, it's fact.
It would be Stockholm syndrome if they were still losing and you had this delusion.
No. They are legitimately a rising basketball team at this point in the season.
All right, so what do you attribute it to? Go, quick, fast.
Well, so Frank Vogel said this after the Magic game. Another win by the Nets. A back-to-back win by the Nets.
Can I just... The
Nets are back.
Good Lord.
How happy are you?
How come I can never find this thing when I need it?
Because your hand is broken.
It's too ridiculous. Right,
let me look at this.
Yeah.
I want to press one.
The Nets are back.
So the Frank Vogel said this after the Magic game that... So the fourth quarter, the Nets started off an 11-0 run. Booker was on the bench. Booker was playing, but he was on the bench unit of Spencer Dinwiddie and Trevor Booker. They went on an 11-0 run, the Nets did, to start the fourth quarter. And it was because of the bench. Mm-hmm. This team's bench, partly because Jeremy Lin is back and that the bench unit is a little better because he's not obviously playing, but the better players are now also on the bench unit. This whole entire team, 1 through 15, let's say, 1 through 12, whatever, are all understanding what they're supposed to be doing out on the floor. It is 100% the credit of Kenny Atkinson, Brian. Wow. I am an Atkinson acolyte.
Wow.
That's what I'm doing
an
right
addict-son?
Now. An addict-son?
Oh, God.
Oh, God. We're just
tweeted us a terrible pun for Kenny Atkinson, for Kenny Atkinson fandom.
The Atklanson?
Oh,
well,
good.
That's good,
Mike.
Atklanson.
Yeah.
Every time a guy comes in, basically on this team, comes into the game, he seems to know what he's doing. He may not be very good, but he seems to know what he's supposed to be doing. In the NBA, you can see dysfunction more than any other sport. Dysfunction is obvious on the court because you can see the interactions between the coaches and the players. This team, while bad, is not dysfunctional.
Who is it that always says, I feel like there's like some national broadcaster, like Hubie Brown or something, I don't know, says... That the one thing you always got to have is an identity. What's your identity? What are you hanging your hat on when you get out there?
Every NBA.
This is a classic thing. And it's one of those very, rote cliche things that I think it's easy to agree with. And the Nets are beginning to find that. And that's, I did not predict it, but it's pounding the paint is what it is. It's streaking into the paint, not pounding it. But yes, we shoot a lot of threes, but also playing at a very fast pace and getting a ton of points in the paint.
Well, yeah, I mean, and again, it's like...
If that's our identity, Mike, that's awesome. That's an awesome identity.
It's a better identity than just shooting threes like it was in the beginning of the beginning of the season. The three-point outage was so... It had nothing to do with basketball. It was simply the fact that they just wanted to shoot threes. It had nothing to do with the flow of the game. It made no sense. This team, now as it's matured, gotten under Atkinson, started to understand what they're supposed to do, is shooting better threes and getting inside like you're saying. I mean, Trevor Booker, just love him to death. So happy he's on this team.
That Orlando game was something else, man.
Yeah. I mean, I really do think it's all Atkinson. They're in a special situation because he is a first-year head coach. So usually coaches do get some kind of slack in their first year. Players aren't immediately don't hate them unless you're Lionel Hollins. And he has made this team, one, continue to give effort despite the fact that they stink and they really have nothing to play for. Yeah. And he's made it so that they are actually winning games while the Hawks should be trying to win basketball games.
Yeah.
And they couldn't go. They look terrible. So we talked about this before the pod, but like Budenholzer was like the god among NBA media for like a year and a half when he took that Hawks team that had the best record in the East or whatever. And everyone is saying he's Popovich Jr.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a team that was like just a disaster.
Dejected.
Did you see? Oh, because you were at the game, you didn't see this. They showed this when Kenny Atkinson was talking to the press before the game. Paul Millsap interrupted him.
Wow.
And just wanted to say hello.
Wow.
And Atkinson said, "Hey, how's the family? Blah, blah, blah."
Yeah, yeah.
Paul Millsap's a free agent, Brian.
Mm.
What could this team use?
We definitely could use a little power forward action. We certainly could.
I'm just saying, man.
Yeah, certainly
there's
could.
Some buzz. There's some positivity around this team. And it's moving in the right direction.
I get it. So what happened to Kent Bazemore, man? He looked just all out of whack out there.
Well, that's Kent Bazemore is the type of dude that this team hopefully, like, I don't know what the Atlanta would want to trade him, but like he has a high contract, and if he's not playing that well, and Atkinson obviously knows how to play with him, it's pretty obvious that that's like the type of dude you target and maybe try to get on this team for nothing. Basically, like, we'll assume salary and keep it going.
Yeah, lots to look forward to, though, Mike. I mean, so looking at this, I think we're 11-22 or 21 or something with Jeremy Lin.
Yeah, I think it's 11-20 or 11-21.
Yeah. So that puts us at about in the 30 win range. I think 28 win range season long.
Not great.
Yeah, no, but still, like, about where, you know, like on the optimistic end of where people were projecting us.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a 30-win team, you're looking at guys that are, you know, teams that are going to have 36 wins and make it into the playoffs.
And this should have been the worst year for the Nets, right? I mean,
is that right? What's the last places?
I know that, like, the bottom two seeds in the East are going to be under 500. I think that's almost guaranteed at this point.
Yeah.
I'd have to look at it. I mean, the fact that the Hawks are a playoff team or were a playoff team, the Pacers are or were a playoff team at one point, the Pistons, who we also have seen, are or were a playoff team. They're all not good.
Yeah.
They're all better than the Nets over the long haul of the season. But if the blueprint is pretty simple for the Nets to at least be semi-competitive, it's sign, throw the big contract to the wing player.
Yeah.
Hopefully you draft a couple of dudes that can play immediately.
Yeah.
And just move on.
I should tell you, off air, Mike sort of plays an antagonist. Like, he's a caricature, really, of himself on the show. But off the air, he is bullish about what Jeremy Lin does. And he attributes a ton of the success to Kenny Atkinson, to Jeremy Lin and his parent. I'm telling you, he's doing it again. But this is off the air. This is what he does. And those tweets where he talks about how excited he is for Jeremy Lin, those should be read sincerely.
Sure.
Whatever. See, look at this. No.
I also don't think
keep it up.
Jeremy Lin is the savior. I don't think he's that.
This is more.
He's not. He's played okay. His per 36. He's a per 36 god, but he's not playing as well since he's come back from injury.
Watch. I'm going to turn off this podcast, and Mike's going to turn.
He's going to blow him up. Yeah. So, and also, what's been great to see is. So I wanted to also throw this. So Jeremy Lin was 10-21 while he was on the team, whatever. Archie Goodwin, the team is 6-5 with Archie Goodwin.
Hey.
So how much do you give Archie Goodwin for that?
Tons.
They signed him to a 2-year deal.
Yeah, it's exciting. Nice to have him on. But he seemed very sweet in his in the long expose about him.
He's just he looks like a child.
Yeah,
he looks like LeBron, like boyish. One of LeBron's children.
Yeah, he does.
Like the little. He should do away with the headband. No headband. What do you think?
The headband takes up too much of his face, I would say. It seems like he doesn't have a very large head. So it's like
he's only 22, and I didn't realize that. You know, these guys get out there like, I think it was in Ned Income's piece about the contract, was that he's 22 and he's the second youngest player on the team to Whitehead, which I didn't even think about. So if you just suddenly were able to draft a guy who is the age of Archie Goodwin, he'd probably be a late first-round pick this year, if you think about it that way. So then he's... I think Archie Goodwin, if he's 22, well, maybe a second round pick.
Mm.
They basically saved a second round pick. Oh, and there's this another interesting thing. You see the second round pick that the Nets could get from the Pacers?
Yeah. We could have four or five picks if we buy another one, too.
And I'm going to do, I didn't tell you this, but I've talked to the superiors at Nets Daily about a story I want to do.
You didn't tell me about this? What's going on?
I haven't told you about this. I'm going to write a draft preview story that I created. It's called... It's about, you know how we talk about the draft in, they have to hit a home run. They just have to hit some doubles.
Mm.
I'm going to give you prospects in each of the four baseball
Do you want to do a little infographic? Can I could do a little design thing for you?
That'd be beautiful.
Would you like
that? We could do a Smeltzegan collaboration.
That'd be nice. Hey, Mike, don't ever leave me out of the loop again. Okay?
I'm sorry.
Bottom line.
Can I tell you one more thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
We've been talking about unicorns. Unicorn is this phrase that...
You've been talking about unicorns.
Okay. So, you've got Miles Turner.
Unicorn paintings on your walls.
You get so mad about Miles Turner when I bring him up. He's a three-point shooting center. You get so mad.
It's just not right. It's not...
Yeah.
It's just, I mean...
Okay. All right. So, Brook Lopez has taken and made more threes than any other seven-footer in the league.
This season. Yeah. He's on pace to break the season record, or the NBA record.
Really?
For, yeah, I think Dirk Nowitzki shot, this was in, I think it was, it must have been a Nets Daily article, 390 for the season is the most a person that's 7 feet tall or taller has ever shot in the season. And Brooke, I think, has 362 or something. If he keeps at his average of 5.2 a game, he's gonna break it or hit it.
And did
was I down the whole time?
No, you're fine. Right. You know, you fluctuate because you don't have a stable look mic at
this
position.
Look at this.
I know you're doing better today. I'm proud of you.
I got an L-shaped. Yeah.
Anyways. And you have a broken hand, but you're still doing it. I'm really proud of you. I think it was what? Was it in the Atlanta game when Brooke had that amazing move on Paul Millsap? Was in the fourth quarter. I think he had that like the turn, spin, turn around again, jumper over Paul Millsap.
Dude, he was hitting some stupid shots that whole game.
And he hit another incredible three, another like unexplainable if you watch Brook from your whole life.
Yeah.
And now is seeing him hit a three where he does the dribble between the legs, kind of even a step back three, which is
he made
incredible.
A shot that would like on the playground, a playground three, like that distance, where he was just splitting two defenders and like shooting it on the go, basically. Like just like sort of almost like a, you know, a very long two layup, like somewhere in the third quarter. It was like one of the most difficult shots I've seen people, like anyone take or make in the season. It was like totally under the radar. Nobody thought a lick about it.
I just think it's incredible how I know no one cares about the Nets nationally. Like, we get it because they have no draft picks. There's nothing interesting about them technically. But Brook is so criminally underrated.
Mm. Gone to the other side of the spectrum, huh?
I've always been pro Brook. Always been pro Brook. Don't you dare.
Sure.
That was an unwarranted eye roll. Sir. Unwarranted.
I mean, and I don't. You talked about trading him for the first.
Well,
30
I think
episodes.
I still would love for them to trade him because it'd be so much more interesting. Mm-hmm. But he is so incredibly underrated. I forget who it was. If it was Dinwiddie or someone else called Brook essentially a unicorn after one of the games they won recently, and it is true. I mean, the guy is. He's evolved incredibly quickly to the modern NBA, and all it took was like a coach who actually was like, hey, Brooke, you should shoot threes. That's all he did.
This is what I was talking about, too, with the guy I went to the game with. It's like, first of all, I always think of Brooke Lopez.
What do you call him, the guy you went to the game with?
Dwight Howard. I can't mention him. You know,
Brother.
Yeah. How basically, like, value-wise, polar opposite Dwight Howard and Brooke Lopez is at present. Just thinking about, like, Brooke Lopez's value only going up as he adds more elements to his game, more weapons to his offense, has to be seen as one of the most offensively gifted centers, you know, in the last how many years. Whereas Dwight is fitting his game into a smaller and smaller little niche.
It's crazy.
It's getting so lame and sad, and Brooke's game is doing all kinds. And you know what I really attribute it to? Is there was a series of coaches that told Brooke to get rebounds. And Kenny Atkinson was like, don't even pay attention to anything about that. Don't even, is Brooke tough thing was like, I put like the, who was it? Johnson, PJ, Avery Johnson, PJ, and Lionel Hollins, that crew of like, we got to get Brooke to be tough down in the paint. Like, they were responsible for nearly ruining his whole self-image and basketball career. Because that's not who he is. He's a finesse player. He's a beautiful unicorn, and they want him to play like a mule. That's it's not what he is.
And it really, you know, I'm not going to bring up trade value, but he is a valuable player just overall.
Yeah.
He's a very valuable player, and he's proven that. And your Dwight Howard point is so correct. I think I was listening to Steve Nash was on Bill Simmons' podcast, and Steve Nash talked about like how at the worst time for Dwight to do this. There was a time when Dwight was just a pick and roll center and would dunk everything. And then he decided, I'm going to train with Hakeem Olajuwon and be a back to the basket center.
Yeah.
When no one wants to see that and no one wants to do that.
Nobody's playing that way. Yeah.
And as like, we, I mean, he was not even noticeable on the floor.
Yeah.
There's not a single Dwight Howard moment. They don't exist anymore. The Rockets got rid of Dwight Howard, and they've gotten 12 more wins or whatever it is. And James Harden is going to win the MVP because Dwight Howard is gone.
Yes. They've replaced him with Ryan Anderson to enormous effect.
Yeah, Ryan Anderson.
Yeah.
Mailbag?
Oh, sure. Why not? Let's just get the mail going.
Mail time.
Mail time.
Mail time.
Mail time. The mail's here.
Yeah, enough of that. Enough of that. first up, this is Jerboy. That's Ken Lewis.
Who? Who is that?
Ken Lewis.
Ken Lewis.
Ken Lewis.
I wasn't expecting the two first names. Ken Lewis. Thanks for
Ken Lewis.
Thanks for hitting me up, Ken Lewis. You're great, and everyone else is great for emailing us. That's netspod@gmail.com.
Wow.
Keep them coming. We adore it.
That's how you promote.
Yeah.
/ host.
So he was saying the travesty of the boy on trade isn't losing Bogey. It's losing the roster spots. Cliff Alexander has killed the last few weeks of D-League and should get a shot. He's 22 and isn't here because of 27-year-old Nicholson, who is capital T terrible.
Yeah, he is terrible.
They saved Wizards so much money by getting rid of a guy that can't play. Any idea how we can fix this disaster? $20 million left, and he... Sorry, my phone turned off. Doesn't fit the Nets at all. If you think Andrew Nicholson doesn't fit the Nets, have you watched any Cliff Alexander clips lately?
No, I haven't.
I mean,
I remembered his game. He went to Kansas, right? He's that guy?
At 22, I would say he is currently less athletic than 35-year-old Zach Randolph, whoever old he is.
Sure.
He cannot get off the ground. I mean, he's like big, and he's, you know, he can finish a play with a dunk, of course, but it's at
which I love.
Yeah, at 22, he is grounded. He is 2 feet firmly on the earth.
Yeah, I mean, the Nicholson thing is like a slight problem, but I still want to give Kenny Atkinson's coaching staff like an off season and then a training camp with Nicholson, because there was something there. I mean, we all remember there was a sliver of something.
There's
a problem that he can't find the court at all on this team where Atkinson plays everyone 20 minutes a game.
Yeah.
And, you know, there should be minutes for a stretch four on this team.
I'm just so surprised that nobody likes my Andre Blatch comparison. Like, it's like a poor man's Andre Blatch, which is very poor, like a very bad situation.
Very poor. But yeah. Blatch was because of his size, just so, I mean, and he could get points. Like, he was always going to get points.
Andrew Nicholson does a lot of what Blatch does, a little less face to the basket stuff than Blatch does. But like, whenever he gets his, you know, 6 minutes and he's looking to do a lot of low post work that's like excessively spinny and you know that kind of, and like, you know, a lot of under the basket hooks and stuff, like that was Blatch's bread and butter.
I just
all right, fine.
To worry about Nicholson is not, I know the roster spot's a big deal, but like, it's, there's other places where they could be having experimentation on in this roster, and we're, you know,
we're still $30 million under the cap, so.
Yeah, they kind of needed to take on money just so they, like, save some face. And then again, I still think, like, if given time and Nicholson has some motivation to do this, he could provide some value down the road.
Yeah.
It was still a good trade. I mean, Boyan was going to be gone. He wasn't doing anything for your team. And in fact, can I just be, I mean, I love him on the Wizards, but I got to be honest, this team's more enjoyable without him. And, it's given more minutes to LeVert and Whitehead and guys like Dinwiddie, who should be on the floor more than a guy who's going to be gone.
So while watching a bunch of Cliff Alexander footage in response to that question, I went to watch some Nate Robinson on the Delaware 87ers.
87ers, yeah.
Did you see this, that they wore these pink Power Ranger jerseys for a game?
Oh, that's great.
See, that's the kind of cross-branding promotion that I'm totally comfortable with.
No.
No, I mean, I prefer it enormously to the stupid patch in the shoulder. Like, that's just so, it's just so lazy. Not creative.
Yeah, what is even the sponsor for the Nets this year coming up?
Infor.
Yeah. Like, that's Infor. Also, I've always been, if you're going to have a sponsor, you get a cool one. There's millions out there. Just get a cool
look,
Steve
you know,
Madden shoes.
can you tell the story about how you watched the Wolf of Wall Street with your mother-in-law?
That's the story.
That's
I went to my mother-in-law came to visit, and Wolf of Wall Street was out, and we're like, let's go see it. And of course, have you seen it?
Yeah, it's the first 5 minutes of that.
Pretty amazingly uncomfortable.
I can't believe you stuck with it. That's unbelievable.
There was like a look in both of our eyes, like we're going to come out of this in the better. Like we're going to go through this moment and then come out, and we'll be able to handle anything.
Yeah,
maybe that was just in my head. She's probably looking at me like,
she's like, "Can we go? Can
idiot.
Take me out of here? Show some initiative."
I still can't believe that they show that scene from Wolf of Wall Street every time Steve Madden's at the game. Like,
yeah,
isn't that basically like? Didn't he have to pay a huge fine, or didn't he get caught up in that legal messing somehow? I'm sure he did.
That's not my world, Mike. I don't know about
who cares. That. Finance.
Do you want? Maybe I should read the next one.
Sure.
What do you think about that idea?
You could do that.
Is that a good idea? Okay. Next up is this is Cheer Boy, Mike Tubby. Thank you for hitting us up, Mike.
By the way, my hands are sweaty right now, and I shook someone's hand whose hand was extremely sweaty.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
The combination was...
Well, no, I just reminded me of whenever you shake someone, because I shook someone's hand today whose hand was really sweaty.
Yeah.
Like unnaturally sweaty, like pure water.
Katie, my wife has hyperhidrosis. She has very sweaty hands. Specifically, it's like she's had Botox shots in the palms of her hands to try to solve it. It's crazy. If you like, if you just like rub the hand, you can it'll drip and fall off. Like you can see
her
it,
hand
like,
will fall off.
Like God, your dad humor right now is off the chain. Take some dad pills
off
before
the
tonight?
Chain. Come on, soft brain. Worst of all.
Oh my God, I can't. Okay, I can't do this. So I feel like we're about to watch the Anchorman.
Right.
All right. Mike Duffy, since we already have three draft picks and could get Indiana's and we'll definitely want to sign a few free agents, I was wondering where you guys think these roster spots will come from with the team playing well lately and guys like Goodwin and Dinwiddie improving and getting guaranteed spots for next year. Who do you guys think will be moved up to open spots?
They're going to trade Brook Lopez. They're going to trade Jeremy
Lin. Hang on. Let me, before we get into this, let me just loop in Cheer Boy! Manny Martinez! Thanks for hitting us up, Manny. So he's basically asking the same thing. He's got a bunch of thoughts on this, though. So he says, I would cut Dinwiddie, Hamilton, and Harris.
Dinwiddie,
who's,
Hamilton,
who's on
Harris.
your making break squad right now? For me, the people that I just generally am not super high on, don't love that. So this is another contentious thing on the internet is Kilpatrick. What to do with Sean Kilpatrick?
Why?
For me, he doesn't fit necessarily the pattern that we're trying
he's
to
achieve.
He's
done better
here.
Though recently, and Atkinson has given him more minutes recently.
Yeah.
He's a reliable-ish scorer.
Reliable-ish scorer. When he's not scoring, it's pretty brutal.
Yeah, he's tried to play defense better. I don't think he's equipped at doing it. I'm still pro Kilpatrick. I know he doesn't fit
his
whatever.
Version of scoring is a little, I think we agree, Joe Johnson-esque. It's a little myopic.
A little bit, but he's more of a, well, not, I don't want to compare him to Joe Johnson, but he can drive to the hoop and he has potential to not be terrible at it. But
okay, so
he'd be on my team. Mm-hmm. Justin Hamilton, I'd be fine with parting, even though him and Brook Lopez are apparently twins or something, whatever they were doing.
They have a special relationship.
You know, I'm trying to look at the restaurant. I mean, Joe Harris hasn't shown anything, even though we were so high on him. And he's only worth $1 million next year, but I think it's probably worth more not to have him on your team and just have that open roster spot.
Yeah.
Dinwiddie's, like, you know, I said earlier in the year that I did not want to see Spencer Dinwiddie play basketball anymore. And I was totally wrong. He's been pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm seeing why he was on this team. And, you know, we brought the whole Yogi Ferrell, Spencer Dinwiddie, blah, blah, blah. But he, like...
He's getting smarter. I mean, he makes a lot of those... Like, I'm glad that we have one of those players that does the super annoying shooting a three while taking the pick, that high pick thing that everyone's doing nowadays. And he's, like, he's in on that scam, which is great.
And I don't think he's not exactly like this guy, but, like, a little Sean Livingston-y, just with the length... And sort of, he doesn't bully guys, but he can use his length to kind of get him around situations and score.
Yeah.
you know, I'd rather have him on the team. But they're, if they have four draft picks or whatever it turns out being, they're going to have to figure it out. What they're going to do, though, is they're going to draft a bunch of international dudes and let this thing stew for even more.
Yeah.
And that's going to annoy people so much when they draft two. They're both their first rounders are guys that aren't going to come over next year.
Yeah.
Everyone's just going to be boiling.
Are they, though? Station. I mean, they're not going to do that with their first rounders.
What?
You think they're going to do that with their first round picks? Both of them?
I think, I mean, what do I know? But I'm saying, I think they could. And this is the type of team that would do that because there's so much value in these. I mean, so I don't know if you saw this. Chad Ford and Kevin Pelton did a top five prospects from the past year in terms of like guys who just were drafted this past draft. If we could redraft, who would we do? And Boston had two guys, Zizic and the French Draymond Green, who were both in the top five, that are guys who are going to come over next year, but they were drafted late because they weren't going to be able to come over.
Yeah.
The Nets are, that's where the value is to get these guys that aren't going to come over.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay. So, and then also Foy obviously hits the cutting room
floor.
He's
gone. That's so sad. He seems like a good teammate, but he's gone.
Yeah.
KJ McDaniels, that, again, that's, they'll see what
he's
they do with
that. He's a
keeper
for me, big time. Yeah. I don't know why he's not getting any burn lately, though.
I wonder if there's like some idea to trade someone like Booker just because I think he's proven his value and his contract's only $9 million next year. And, you know, I mean, I love him, but I don't think he has value on this team. He's not as good as Lynn and Lopez, and he's of the age where it's like, what's he adding other than good guy vibes? And good guy vibes are important on this Nets team.
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, you, as far as like a tough guy, you know, I think it is slightly important to have a guy that makes you feel tougher than you are. Like whenever I play pickup basketball, if I've got a tough guy on my team, I'm like, yeah, like this team's good. I think it's helpful on the emotional spectrum to have a person, and I'm not saying that he's irreplaceable in that way, but I think you do need a certain guy. I mean, he's got like a nice guy, tough guy kind of thing. He's
nice
like
guy,
he's,
tough guy,
he's
yeah.
like yeah. I don't know what the comparison would be there.
Like Russell Crowe in The Nice Guys. Nice guy, tough guy.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but you do want your basketball teams, you actually do, yeah, you want the sort of a palette of personalities. You don't want all the same notes. That wouldn't be actually a fact. If they were all nice dudes. No. Like the thing about the Spurs is that everyone thinks like, oh, they're all pretty bland, but they're not.
No.
They're all, but every time I see Kawhi get interviewed, it's just like,
yeah.
What's going on? I need to know. He's the most mysterious NBA superstar ever. Of our lifetime, there can't be anyone who is as
what has he ever revealed about himself?
Nothing.
Do we know any of his interests? He's one of those guys that's got an apartment with a lawn chair and a clock in it, and that's it.
He's Matthew McConaughey from True Detective. That's it.
Maybe, just lives for the game. Just has a Nerf hoop in his bedroom, and that's it.
Anything else?
Nope, that's it.
All right, want to do news around the league?
I sure do. Oh, yeah.
But first.
Yeah.
Before news around the league.
Good idea, Mike. Hey, you're getting good at this, man.
Hey, yo, do you play Daily Fantasy? Do you? I do. If you do, you should be playing on Draft. You should get this. Your chances of winning on Draft are almost 3 times better than on FanDuel and DraftKings. This is true. The data shows 90%... of players lose on DraftKings. On FanDuel, over 40% of the money goes to just 1% of the players. Now, if you're not a pro and you're not some creep who's spending hours a day on fantasy, you should be playing at it on Draft. You'll win more often, it's statistically proven. On Draft, you do a simple snake draft just like at the beginning of your season-long league. You can do drafts whenever you want. They last just for one day and they take only minutes to complete. So I have Draft on my phone. I just did a quick game yesterday and I got Russell Westbrook with like the 3rd pick, and I crushed it, which was improbable. That would never happen with DraftKings or whatever else. So download Draft now. Just search Draft in the App Store, and it'll come up first. Be sure to enter the promo code ABPN when you download, and you'll get 100% bonus when you deposit. Again, search Draft in the App Store, and be sure to enter the promo code ABPN.
Nice. let's do some news.
It's the news!
All right, go.
actually, I guess with the reports out this week, I don't know if we should be playing that anymore.
What reports?
It's the Bill O'Reilly reports.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. They're always out there.
That's anyway, not going to stop me. Come on.
News around the league.
Yeah, what a rip, brother.
Interesting news. I guess, we both went to Syracuse, in full honesty. But Patrick Ewing is going back home to the Georgetown Hoyas. He's going to coach the Georgetown men's basketball team.
Nice.
Weird. Different parts of my brain are reacting in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
The analytical, what's the best move here? The planning part of my brain says, I don't know if Patrick Ewing is the best pick to run a college basketball team because he has zero experience doing that.
My this goes into a thing that that happens to me a lot this time of year, where they'll be like, "Oh, Brian likes basketball. Brian, like, what do you like about March Madness? Who do you got in the? What's your bracket like?" And I'm like, "Thing is, I don't ever watch college basketball. I just don't care about it. Blanket, don't watch it." And they're like, "But I thought you." And I was like, "Nope, I don't do it. I don't do it. I don't like it."
Those are people don't understand.
If you watch enough professional basketball, I think it's really hard to watch college basketball. I just so much worse. I hate to say it. It's just so
no, it
much
is
worse.
I mean, it's exciting. It's a different. It's just a different product. It's a totally different product. It's
a
packaged
different
differently it's,
and lesser product. I would venture
to
say.
Oh, Wayla. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah.
But so Ewing goes home. I am happy for him because it was depressing to see the once great Patrick Ewing, a physical marvel in a way, an attitude player, aggressive, great, fantastic.
You're getting all of my space with this Patrick Ewing spiel.
Was subject to be an assistant coach sitting in a tiny folding chair.
Yeah.
He always looked depressed.
Yeah.
There were so many stories out there of how he would interview for jobs and he wouldn't get it. His friend, one of his best, well, I don't know, best friends, but one of his friends, Michael Jordan, basically gave him that assistant head coaching job, but he would not give him the head coaching job.
Yeah.
But I'm happy that it's like, not, he wasn't one of my heroes, but it was like, it was weird to see someone who was once so great basically ride the bench like he's a minor league baseball player.
Yeah.
And now he gets to go home and he's back where he was great.
Yeah.
And we'll see, you know, maybe he'll be amazing. Jeff Van Gundy had some very nice quotes to Adrian Wojnarowski about how, like, you know, the perception that Ewing is maybe not the most intelligent person in the world is so completely wrong and all that stuff. That's great. I'm excited to see what happens. It's just, it's like, I'm relieved that now when I watch, not that I watch that many Hornets games, but now I don't have to see this depressed, once great former player. Of all the great players of that era, he had the strangest, most public way of, like, not achieving that next step.
I mean, yeah, that was a thing that everyone talked about. Like, literally, anytime there was a national game with any of those teams that he was sitting on the bench for, they would talk about that. Like, he takes interviews, can't get the job.
It's
could you
sad.
Imagine if there was just like a TV show about how you couldn't get a job?
But like, in a way, like it's endearing. It's endearing that he would put himself through something that a lot of great players would not put themselves through, which is basically to be an assistant coach for, you know, guys who weren't that good in the league or wouldn't even players. He was like, I'm fine with that if it gets me to my goal. It's a hard worker, unlike Jason Kidd, who just steals jobs and tries to get people.
But he's a genius. He's a goddamn genius.
Interesting quotes from Carmelo Anthony today. So we're recording this on a Monday.
Yeah.
I guess he spoke to the press in some way, and the question was asked, you know, at the end of the season, a lot of times players will sit down with the GM or something to see where the team is going. Mm-hmm. And here are some of the quotes from Carmelo about this. He says, "The chips will be on the table in that meeting," Anthony said with a smile. "I see the writing on the wall. You don't know what the writing is on the wall, though, but I see it."
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I think that's an interesting quote.
It's like Stranger Things. Like, he's got the
demagogue or Demogorgon.
Yeah, he's like Winona Ryder. The writing's up on the wall.
He's got the Christmas lights?
Yeah.
I love Stranger Things. But yeah. I think that quote, "I see the writing on the wall. You don't know what the writing is on the wall, though, but I see it." I think that is him saying that Phil is either going to leave or be fired. And that Dolan has told Carmelo privately, because Dolan likes Carmelo. That seems to be pretty obvious, that You, Carmelo, just kind of wait this out. Wait out this half of the season. It really stinks, I know, but Phil is not here. Mm-hmm. Phil is going to go away, and you don't have to worry about him anymore. He also said something like, so I guess Scottie Pippen was talking about how Carmelo was getting bad treatment from Phil, and Carmelo says, whether it's good or bad, people are speaking up their opinion rather than me trying to convince them or not convince them, people of the situation, what's going on, and I can just play basketball. Everybody sees what's going on, so they're going to have their own opinion. Everyone sees, essentially, of how terrible the situation is.
Yeah.
So I think...
I like you being... Can I just say that, and we're not the only people to be on the record as having hated the decision to hire Phil for that position from day one, but there was nobody... I don't think we ever were not critical of it, and we've only ever been 100% right. Do you want a high five?
Can I be honest? I thought it was a good hire.
Did you win?
Yeah. I thought it was fun because they were in such a disaster. Remember how
I gotta go back and listen to these tips. You just went along with me when I was talking about how terrible it was, and you just nodding your head.
Yeah, I didn't want to
say it. Well, I'm going to high-five myself.
Good for you.
If you don't mind, excuse me.
Don't do it, Greg. Last thing, and apparently this story, I saw this on uprocks.com.
Cool website.
I don't know even who the rapper they were talking, Little Short. You ever heard of Little Short?
Nope.
Little Short is apparently a legendary Oakland rapper. And you remember the LeBron, Soulja Boy, Deshaun Stevenson, Jay-Z feud?
Yeah.
Little Short was somehow attached to it. Maybe I think Jay-Z like covered his song in a way, or took the beat from his song to do that Soulja Boy diss song.
Okay.
Little Short says Jay-Z did it because he was trying to get LeBron to come play for the Nets, and he wanted to get in LeBron's good graces, so he wrote essentially a diss song about Deshaun Stevenson and Soulja Boy to make LeBron know that Jay-Z likes him.
That there will be more songs in your future if you play for the Nets.
So there you go. LeBron was almost a Net.
When did that
headline?
That was what the headline was?
No, I think I don't know. I just saw the story today.
That's a hilarious story.
Someone in basketball Twitter tweeted it out, and then consumed.
That's such a hilarious non-story.
I consumed it. Well, that's it.
Hey, you did a great job tonight, Mike.
Thanks.
I give you a 7 out of 10.
Okay, I'll take that. I don't grade my peers. All right, Brian.
How dignified.
Well, thank you for listening. Almighty Baller Network, a lot of exciting things. NetsDaily.com. Again, we're going to be doing some exciting stuff coming up, Brian. Are we?
That outro, I'm going to raise you up to a 7.5, Mike. You're really zipping through that. That was nice.
At BK Glue Guys. iTunes, search Glue Guys. Make sure you're downloading the right one, though. There used to be our old podcast feed. Go find the new one. You'll see it. It has the most recent episodes.
Yeah.
Brian, happy Passover.
Good stuff, Mike. And hey, thanks everybody, and good night. Right?
Yeah.
Oh man, I blew it this time. Damn it.
Brian.